Another episode of Abdullah Samir, your friendly neighborhood ex-Muslim. Today I have a special guest, Jan Kartusek. Jan is in the Czech Republic and had a little skirmish with Islam. So I thought this would be a good conversation. Jan wanted to have a conversation. He has a podcast as well. We'll introduce his podcast, which is called Debating Truth, right? It's a new channel that you have.
Yep.
That's exactly. Right. And so Jan is here to talk about his experiences and how he ran into Islam. We're going to talk about how and why Islam appealed to him, you know, the world thought process that's going on. And he was saying, we were just having a conversation, there's actually a lot of people just like him in like Europe in general that are finding appeal in religious ideas and surprisingly not Christianity, which is, you know, the background of most Europeans, but Islam. So let's get into it. How's it going, Jan?
It's pretty good. Pretty nice day, so I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful. So let's go back to the really beginning. Let's talk about because people don't know you, people like me don't know very much about Czech Republic or in general Europe. So, you know, just to get an idea of the religious sort of background over there, the demographics, let's go back to your upbringing. Like, you were raised, you told me you were not raised as a religious individual, although your family is Christian. Is that right?
Yeah. So I live in the Czech Republic, but I'm technically from Slovakia. And 20 years ago, it was one country, Czechoslovakia. So it's kind of a problem for some people. But essentially, these countries are very similar. And the majority of people are Catholics, let's say, but it's a bit different. So where I come from, I'm from Slovakia. There's over 70%, I think, Roman Catholics in the entire population. And then in the Czech Republic, it's like 70% atheist. So it's like the most atheist country in the world. So it's a bit polar opposite. I was raised, I would call myself a Christian because I had I was baptized and I did all these things. I was raised Christian, go to church, you know, all these things. It was never something I was like convinced of, because I think when you grow up with something that's like forced upon you since like early childhood, it's kind of a thing that you disregard as you grow older. I think that's like common with all the religions. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your family wasn't really religious, but we were baptized.
I had like my grandma and grandfather, they were religious, and then my mom wasn't really, but we still had to go to church. It's like compulsory, okay. You know. Yeah,
so you did go to church actually.
Did services. I was like one of the guys who was helping the priest to do his rituals for a couple of years. Yeah.
Oh, so you were actually somewhat religious in some ways.
Well, I wasn't. It's just like I had to do these things. It was like a job, right? So like I didn't have a choice, you know.
interesting. So then, okay, so let's keep moving on then. So you were not religious, but you were fine with that. What? Yeah. How did you run into Islam? What happened?
And so it was, you know, in 2019, I used to watch a lot of videos about boxing and stuff. And I was really like drawn to a couple of fighters who had Muslim background, because the way they lived, like the simple lifestyle they had, it was really like appealing to me, because, you know, we live nowadays in societies where everything is so complex and people don't know what to do. They have like anxieties and all these things that I didn't see that in those guys. And so then I started watching a couple of YouTube videos. I think it was early 2020, January, February, from, you know, YouTubers about Islam, and started watching debates really. And so that's kind of how I got into it. So I obviously knew about Islam since everybody knows, right? Some basics. I've been to Turkey. I visited Muslim countries, right? I've even met like President Erdogan. But I never like got into the concept. Like I never understood why women cover. Like I didn't even care, right? Like I thought it's like some rules or something. But I just wanted to deeper understand like what's behind Islam. And so yeah, and so I started watching those debates, and slowly I started becoming interested. You know.
Interesting. So yeah, keep going. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, and so I think it was a couple of months. And then there was like a break for a couple of weeks, and I got back into it. And the whole thing, it wasn't really debating Islam, to be honest. It was debating God, because like you can't talk about Islam if you don't accept the premise of God, right? So first they have to get you over that hump of like, you have to believe in God. And at that point, I'm an atheist. So for 10 or 15 years, I haven't been to church. I think like there's no life purpose, right? There's all these things are made up. It's just for stupid people. Stupid people believe in God, right? That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And then I watched these debates and these guys seem really educated, like really intellectually prepared. They were able to handle atheists really easily, like because they have like atheists don't have really, really good, I would say, arguments. Mm-hmm. Not those who were they debating, I guess. And
Speakers Corner video you were watching? Okay. Yeah, so they tend to, I mean, the problem with the Speakers Corner is they tend to pick the ones that go well for them and they upload those channels, those ones, right? I find Matt Dillahunty far better of the Atheist Experience. And he was the one, I think, that actually made me kind of go more towards atheism, mm-hmm. rather than being a deist. So that guy I felt was like undefeatable to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, Speakers Corner, it does come across very compelling, very strong when the arguing with people, and these people, they don't have an answer for them, like the contingent. Go on.
Yeah. And so the I would say like the biggest argument that still kind of holds me back is the contingency argument, or the argument that, you know, basically without the concept of God, nothing makes sense, to be honest. Like if you add that component into every aspect of your life, it's much easier to live life, to be honest. Everything makes sense, like everything falls to structure. So just debating the beginning of the universe was kind of like a big topic, and that was kind of the hump that got me over, like, okay, there's probably there's a big chance that there might be something outside of it that had like that created these things. And then they start going into, okay, well, it has to be just one thing. It has to be, you know, all powerful, all, you know, all these things. And then they go into the Islam concept, right, from there. So that kind of took me a couple of weeks to get into. And then I never saw any argument that would disprove this. Like, I never heard anyone to kind of go attack that particular argument, or the fine-tuning of the universe argument, right? Something like that. So that's kind of like the basics. To move like an atheist from to like consider that there's a God, and then from there it was more about Islam, and just because if they would start talking about that first, I wouldn't listen to them, right? So I had to kind of go through that first God kind of argument.
Interesting. May I give my two cents on the fine tuning and contingency?
Yeah, go ahead,
and then we can go back to your story. So for me, the fine tuning argument, I think the two you mentioned, actually, fine tuning and contingency, mm-hmm. these are like probably the best two arguments. So the fine tuning argument, I think a reasonable response to it is that we don't know if this is the only universe that we exist in, right? Like, it's quite possible that there are more universes, and each one of the universes has different constants, right? The one that would have life in it would be the one that we are in, because that just has the right, like, there's two ways to look at it. When you look at the Earth, for example, some people will say, look at the Earth, it's a Goldilocks zone. Goldilocks means it's not too hot, it's not too mm-hmm. cold, it's right in the spot where life can exist. So if someone's looking at it from a design perspective, they would say, oh, look, it God put it there so that there would be life. But if someone's looking at it from a different perspective, they would say, well, of course, that's where life started, because that's the only possible place where life could start. You wouldn't get life on Mars because it's cold, and, you know, and there's times where it faces the sun and everything would die. So even if there was a possibility of life, it would be very unlikely, because the conditions do not exist. So the same way that natural selection works on life, it could also work on universes too, right? So my understanding is that universes pop into existence from the quantum form. So there's a book called Metaphysics Explained. It's a book that I read, where he goes into some of the whole idea of, you know, the universe's beginning and end and quantum form. And the way he explained it to me made a lot of sense, that a universe began to exist at a certain point. It popped into existence. It could have been that the attributes of a universe made it continue existing, whereas there's other universes, they come into existence and they just stop existing, or they don't have the requisites of life. Kind of like when you know, there's a joke that some atheists make that the puddle says, "Hey, look at this hole. It was designed for me." Like, mm-hmm. It's like, yes, it wasn't, the hole wasn't designed for you. The water fell into the hole and formed the puddle because of the hole, right? And in the same way, sometimes it does appear to be an appearance of design, but it's not necessarily always the case. For example, when you go to a beach, and if someone went to the beach, and Dawkins uses this example, and you, near the water, you see a lot of small pebbles, and away from the water, you see big pebbles. So if someone says, "Hey, look, someone took all the big pebbles and put them far away from the water," we would say, "No, obviously that's not what happened. The water had that effect," right? So the fine-tuning argument, from that perspective, to me, it's not totally convincing, because there could be other universes as well. And the fact is that the universe is not fine-tuned for life. There are more black holes, as Alan Ra has said, there's more black holes in the universe than life. As far as we know, there's only one example of life, which is where we are. We've looked, mm-hmm. we're looking, and you know, chances are there will be other places where life exists in the universe, because the universe is so big and it's been around for so many years, like 10 billion years, and there's 10 billion stars in the universe. It's so gigantic that there is a possibility that there is life somewhere in the universe. Whether we will ever find it, whether we will ever know this, is unlikely, because, you know, and even as time goes by, because the universe is expanding, chances are it'll be more and more difficult for us to ever reach those places. So there's gonna come a point in time where we look out at the sky and all we will see is a galaxy, if we live long enough. And let's say there's aliens somewhere else in the world. Those aliens, they will be looking out into space and they'll see nothing. All they will see is their own galaxy, because galaxy will stay together because of gravity, but because of the expansion of the universe, they'll see nothing. And they're going to think they're all alone, just like we think we're all alone right now. And maybe all of us, you know, maybe somehow, you know, it gets into science fiction, we'll travel faster than the speed of light. I don't know. That's not even possible, really. But who knows? Like, maybe we'll figure out ways to you know, cross this great chasm. But from what I see, the universe does exist, and there is some, you know, like, you can call them constants. For example, the weak nuclear force, the strong nuclear force, all of those things are there for the universe to continue existing. Otherwise, it would have collapsed on itself or whatever. So that's there. But we don't know for sure if that was selected by chance, whether there's multiple ones and the ones that didn't exist, they just stopped existing. We don't even know. Like, I'm agnostic on the whole thing. So I don't even know if we're in a simulation. Maybe this whole thing is a computer simulation. Like, there's no way to know. So I think the best position is agnosticism. Is to just say, frankly, we don't know. We don't understand why we're here. What are we doing here? You know, how, like, we do have a pretty good idea of how life started, I think. We don't know for sure. Like, we're not able to replicate it. But if life is so amazing like it is, chances are it's not going to be easy to replicate. Otherwise, we'd see life everywhere in the universe, right? So if whatever happened was a rare enough situation that it happened only once, then I think that's to be expected, right? What do you think about that so far?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. But again, maybe even if there are multiple universes, you know, I've heard these theories, it still doesn't neglect that there might be like someone or something that was like outside of, like, it's still, that's the problem with it. Like, it still allows that option to exist, right?
Sure.
And so if you... then you have to kind of have like a jump of belief, and you say, okay, let's assume that that's the case, right? Which, when you make, it's everything, like, I had the experience, everything just started to make sense to me. So that was like really like emotional, because, you know, I always looked at the world like you just described, everything like that. And then when I made the jump, I was like, everything makes sense. Because before that, I always had these questions and these things like, okay, whether that's the multiverse theory or whatever. And when I made the jump, it does make sense. So I guess it's all about belief. There's no like reason to, or like a fact for God, but you just have to kind of go through that jump. And when you make it, it's very strong. And then I was like, you know, it did make sense to me. So I was like, is this faith or what is this? Because I'm feeling it for the first time in my life, right? I'm like, okay, this is interesting.
That's a good point.
And it's like the life is a game, like it's in a computer, and like, you know, what's the goal now? Mm-hmm. So your goal is to worship the creator, right? So it's so easy, because before that, it's so hard. You don't know nothing. So it's kind of like you're, you know, kind of stranded. So yeah.
Yeah. No, that's an excellent point. Let's talk about that a little bit more. So religion gives you certainty. It gives you like a sort of like, because to me, the same thing happened to me when I was a Smiley and I was very skeptical and I didn't even know if I believed in God. And then I became Sunni. I'm like, wow, this is the Quran. This is how I have to live my life. This is what I got to do. It's mm-hmm. all there in the book. Is that like, is that what you're saying? That's what happened to you? Tell us what happened like, with that, like how it made you feel when you found out that this, that Islam, you thought it was true. How did it make you feel?
Yeah, when I did that jump, then I started reading Quran and everything made sense to me. But it wouldn't make sense to me if I didn't make that jump. So I would just look at it as an atheist, like this paragraph doesn't make sense. But then I look at it and it says, oh, who you believe. Oh, you know, and it goes like that. So I'm like, okay, he's talking to me, right? It does make sense. So you have to look at it through that perspective. Otherwise, nothing makes sense in Islam. But if you look at it through that perspective, I gain like understanding of like, oh, that's why Muslims do that. Oh, that's why this makes sense. Oh, this is why this makes sense, which doesn't make sense to Western mind at all. And so I started to shift my perspectives and I looked at people, you know, I live in Prague, which is like the most liberal city on earth. There's so a lot of, you know, nightclubs and people smoke weed. It's very liberal. And so I looked at people, I was looking at them differently. Like, these guys have no idea what's this about. Like, they are just enjoying dunya, right? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Like, that's just a test, right? There's a real world out there. And so it just, the whole concept made sense to me, because in Christianity, they never talk about these things. Like, when I ask these questions, my nuns or my priests, they would just say, shut up, Jan, or like, no, we don't talk about that. So it's like, well, you're leaving me with like something I can't explain, so that I'm going to be an atheist, right?
What did you ask them?
Anything. Like, okay, so if I go to heaven, can I have a beer? I asked the priest. And they were like, this is a stupid question or something. But in Islam, they would say, right?
Yeah.
They would tell me exactly what you're going to get. Like, they have an answer for everything. So that's why I didn't see a lot of debates with Christians or something, because it's like... you know, Islam, like the guys who do these dawah or whatever, they are really prepared for all these things, you know, especially from someone like me who just, they know what's going to pop into my mind before I say so. So they will be prepared with an argument. Yeah.
Mm. So then you found out Islam was true, and then you felt that this is how I got to live my life. And it brought you happiness, right? That's what you were saying.
So I found not happiness at all. Mm-hmm. I wasn't searching for happiness. I was searching for meaning, and it was like clear. So like I was walking on the street and I saw like a homeless person. I was like, I have to give them money. And then I was like, well, if I don't, then I'm going like there's like, so I had this, like, if you go on the traffic light and you have like a police camera taking a picture, if you go through a red light. So I had that like Allah was like a, you know, police. So it was always on my mind, like what is gonna please, you know, Allah. So I should do this charity act, because it's gonna, you know, it's good for me, but it's also good for society, it's good for the person. So I started to do these things, and I thought to myself, wow, what a great concept. Like, it's gonna make me a better human being. And I think that's the thing, like a lot of Muslims are good people because of that pressure they feel, right? Because you have to be a good person to, at least with these like daily activities, right? So I think that's like a good, I think, side of Islam as well. Like, it kind of makes you a better person from that perspective.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was never like that, you know. So I was like, I started doing these things, you know. So yeah.
So that's a good point. So, and this is something I've thought about as well. The whole idea of, let's call it, Plato's noble lie. I mean, that's one way to look at it. Plato came up with this idea of the noble lie, that if you lie to people, they will be better. Like, if you tell them there's a God watching them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what the actual idea was, but the same idea that, you know, when people say that, you know, when without God, the people will be like liars, murderers, mm-hmm. and rapists or whatever, and they'll be like backstabbing you. The same idea that religion, you know, it sells you, it makes you, it's opium of the masses, right, for example, right? I think there's some truth in this, that, you know, ancient humans actually benefited from religion because it created a social structure, it created a group, a super group that could be bigger than a tribe. So when you had tribes fighting, different tribes fighting, and the perfect example is to go back to Muhammad's life. In Muhammad's life, you had the Aus and the Khazraj, they were fighting each other. And this was just tribalism, right? And this tribe was fighting that tribe, and the Jews had their own tribe. And then Muhammad came and created a super tribe. The super tribe based on faith, based on an abstract idea, right? Mm-hmm. And belief in a common God, a common spirit, a common deity, this can make... This is a common uniting force that human beings have used throughout history to gain power and force and might. And that's what Muhammad did. Muhammad united them and made them stop fighting and said, all of us have to be good to believers. You cannot kill another believer. Islam says, whoever kills a Muslim intentionally will go to the fire of hell forever, right? Except if it's a mistake. And then, you know, then of course you wonder, well, what happens to the fact that Aisha, the wife of the Prophet, was fighting Ali, the cousin and the son-in-law of the Prophet, and they had a big war, and a lot of Muslims were killed. And at the end of the battle, Aisha was taken captive. The wife, ex-wife, I guess, because she, you know, he died. The wife of the Prophet was taken captive by the Muslims. And of course, according to Islamic law, she would be booty. She mm-hmm. would become someone's slave, right, in Islamic law. But of course, they didn't do that because she's a wife of the Prophet, and you can't take her as a sex slave. That would be the biggest blasphemy of all. But according to Islam, like, so there's this contradiction there. And there is contradictions in all, I think, all religion. I think we humans have evolved a way of keeping those contradictions at bay by using cognitive dissonance. So cognitive dissonance is basically you're able to hold two competing views in your mind at the same time. Mm-hmm. And even though they contradict, you keep them in, you know, different compartments in your life. So you might be like a doctor, and you might know that evolution is, you might have learned evolution and you studied it, you understand antibiotics and antibiotic resistance to bacteria and all of these things. Yet you don't believe in evolution because you were taught in your religious book that Adam and Eve are the first man and woman. And that's not compatible with evolution, right? You have to. So how do you do that? Yeah. How do you have these two ideas in your mind at the same time? Well, cognitive dissonance, right? You just have to say, well, evolution, only microevolution. Yeah, the bacteria evolves, but humans don't evolve. Humans are special. Humans are different, right? So
yeah, I think everybody has to do that in their own mind, because it's like a funny battle you have to have with your own brain. Like, I've read about a guy, a black guy who went into KKK rallies, and he converted a lot of Nazis into like normal people.
Yeah.
And he didn't convert them. He just disregarded all their kind of points. And then they had to kind of convince themselves, like, well, he is educated, he does this, but it's still true. And then they kind of have to go away through their own kind of reasoning. So
exactly. I think the best way, I think one of the best ways to engage people is to use street epistemology, which is one of, Anthony Magnabosco has a channel on this. And it, basically the idea is you only ask questions. It's an interesting approach. Like, you don't tell anyone anything. You don't say you're wrong. Someone will come to you and, for example, they'll say, well, I think Islam is true. And then all he does is he asks them, okay, tell me, why do you think that? And then they'll answer the question. And they'll say, okay, but if I came to you and I said, there's two religions, Islam and Christianity. And then mm-hmm. I said, I thought Christianity was, you're telling me Islam is true. This guy's telling me Christianity is true. How do I know which one it is true? And then they have to think about, okay, now they have to figure out what's the difference there. And then they'll answer. And then by the end of the conversation, a lot of times the certainty has gone down. At the beginning, he asks them, how confident are you in your religion, whether it's Christianity, Islam, atheist, whatever it is, right? Although he's atheist, he doesn't tell them that. And then by the end, he asks them again, well, how confident are you now? And usually they go from like a 10 to like a 6. And they're like, yeah I got to think about these things. I'm not even sure. Like, you raise some really good questions. So even just by questioning sometimes, you can kind of highlight that cognitive dissonance. And then people will realize that I'm trying to have my cake and eat it too. I'm saying something that if I accept it, it actually contradicts myself. because I can't use that same argument that, well, I was born as a Muslim, so that's why I'm Muslim. Well, okay, well, someone's born as a Hindu. Does that make Hinduism true? No, it's because of the Quran. Okay, tell me why. Why is this? And then it's a good conversation to have.
I think most people actually, like, especially in the West, they don't think about these deep questions, like where did I come from or something. And these Dawah guys come to you and they say, you're waking up on a plane. What's your first question? Mm. Where am I going? Who am I? How did I get here? Right. So that's kind of how they get you. And people don't think about it. None of my friends ever asked me anything like that. They just say, oh, nothing makes sense. Right. It's all atheism because we're kind of programmed to it. But then when you start thinking about it, like, okay. And then the guy tells you, I have the answer to all those three questions. Right. It's a very strong value proposition because essentially every human being thinks about these three things all the time. Like, okay, where did I come from? Where am I going? What's the purpose of my life? And they say, well, I have all the answers. So it's like, if he told me that before, it would make sense. But through questioning me, and then I think about it, you know, all the time, it is a very strong value proposition. And I think especially nowadays society, you know, I think there's a case where a lot of people in prison or drug addicts embrace religion because their life is so disorganized that it really helps you, actually. Like, yeah. It truly helps you. Whatever it is, it's Islam or Christianity, to organize your life because you have boundaries and you have a reason to not to do something because there's a God or something. And so, yeah, I just think nowadays it's going to be a big rise in it because especially over here, you know, there's a lot of like a lot of nihilism, right, on the streets, and like people don't believe in God. And so at some point they will be like, okay, there's a raise in suicides and all these things are going up because I think also a drop in religion was had something to do with it. Now, I'm not saying it's good to accept religion, but I'm saying there's a benefit to it. So, you know, it's kind of hard to just go back when you experience the benefit, when everything made sense, and now I have to go back to, oh, nothing makes sense again. And because all these theories that I read about and all the books, they still don't make sense to me, right? Even the string theory, nothing is still completed, right? Because it's still like research and it's going to be thousands of years until we do something. So it's like, well, what do I do now? You know, definitely. So that's kind of, that's like very, very strong. So I never was like a belief person. I was never like searching for a belief. I was just trying to scientifically disprove a theory or like scientifically get to a conclusion that, okay, there might be a God. So yeah, that was my kind of journey.
When I have debates now with people, with Muslims, let's say, they always kind of try to convince me first that you have to accept there's a God before we talk about Islam.
Yeah.
I always say no, because let's just presume a God may exist or even a God does exist. Because frankly speaking, if you believe in God, but you don't think God sent any revelation to humanity, you don't think God spoke to humans, you don't think God is communicating, responding to prayers, intervening, then that God is irrelevant to our lives. That power or that force. So let's go back to the contingency argument. That, can you explain the contingency argument and then I'll give a response to it? Oh, like how, okay. So basically, you know, everything depends on something, right? Yeah. As you explained it in your video. And therefore, you know, like basically the sky depends on, you know, like the universe.
Yeah, like the pen depends on somebody who made it. That depends on the guy who supplied the materials for the pen. Then he depends on the sun. The sun depends on, you know, the galaxy. The galaxy depends on the gravitational force that holds it together. That depends on the dark matter or whatever it is, right? It goes back and it never stops because everything kind of goes, is an effect from something before it. And so the only way to kind of get away from this circle is to say, well, if there was a beginning, then it must have been something outside of the universe, because it couldn't be in it, because it wouldn't be this way. It wouldn't start like this, right? It's a logical fallacy in a way. So yeah, so that's kind of, I don't know if I explained
it. Yeah, that's perfect. That's what I was looking for, like a kind of general explanation of it. And so the contingency argument says that if this universe existed on a state before it existed now, and we keep going back and keep going back and keep going back, we can't go back to infinity.
Yeah.
It has to be a beginning, right? So, and we know the universe itself has a beginning, like the actual universe has a beginning. But what we don't know, and this is why I have some questions now. I would say we don't know for sure what happened before. Is there even a before the Big Bang? Because that's when time started, actually, right?
Yeah.
So, but if you look at different theories, you know, the universe could be cyclical, it could be going in a cycle, meaning it you know, expands and then collapses or expand, like that's one idea. You know, they call it the big bounce, just like the big bang, right? Mm-hmm. It expands and eventually it'll collapse. That doesn't seem as likely as what's called a cold death or heat death. Basically, the universe is just gonna, like, there's gonna be no energy left in the mm-hmm. universe. It's just gonna be empty and dead, and it'll just be like that forever and ever. That's another possibility. But yeah, we don't know for sure. But the idea that, let's just say there is a prime mover. This is how I see it. This prime mover, we have no idea whether this power, this force, has any sort of personality or power, not power, any personality or any sort of, you know, ability to even like talk to us, anything like that. Like what we call God, we usually think of, what we call God, we usually think of as a being with a personality. But there's no reason to jump to that conclusion, because it could be that this force is like, I mean, it sounds silly, but like a jellyfish. A jellyfish is a creature that has no brain, yet it's still, you know, doing things, right? So this power, this superpower, and in other religions, for example, Hinduism, I think they call it Atman. This power force, this thing that, you know, pervades the universe, that created all of us. There's no necessary reason that this intended to create us. I mean, for all that we know, it's just as possible that we are an accident. Even if God exists and God created the universe, however he created it, assuming he's, you know, we're saying he, but it created the universe. And then through the natural process of natural selection, abiogenesis, life started by accident. And it's quite possible that even if God exists, that we are a cosmic accident and God doesn't even know about us, or God doesn't even care about us, or that we are completely irrelevant to God. Like, we are nothing more than a bacteria in our lives. Like, there's probably bacteria all over the desk that I'm sitting at. I don't even think about it twice. I couldn't even be bothered with the bacteria. We could be like that sort of bacteria in God's existence, right? And here we are, we're pleading God, we're praying to God, we're looking for guidance. We want there to be a meaning, right?
Yeah.
But there may not be a meaning even if God exists. I mean, that's the scary thing to many people, that maybe, you know, like this is just all we have. And the only only purpose in life is for our DNA to copy itself and to spread itself. Like, kind of like, that's the purpose of our DNA, right? A genetic programming makes us want to reproduce, basically, right? So that's the purpose of our life in some ways. I mean, it doesn't have to be the purpose of our lives, but frankly speaking, that's the purpose of our existence. Yeah. We don't have a purpose, right? I think all we have is what we make for ourselves, what we want to sort of create. If we want to be the best father, the best parent, we want to be a leader, we want to create, you know, for example, a company that will leave a legacy, we want to make paintings, we want to make beautiful music, or whether we just want to be, you know, a con artist and rip off people. I mean, we have to make our own purpose, honestly, at the end of the day. I think that's all we have.
No, I think that was my default position, you know, for many years. But the problem, it's like everything is, nothing makes sense, you know, in that kind of a state to me, because, you know, you get caught up easily, you know, in drinking or something, because there's no kind of forcing you to think about your actions, to be honest. You can do whatever. You can have your own morality, obviously, from family, from the society and everything, but it's technically, there's nothing holding you back. So maybe there's something to it. But I think, like, God, the concept of God is interesting, because I think God doesn't know where he came from. And so I think that's what's going on, actually. I think he's trying to realize his own kind of, like, existence through us, like, through all whatever beings exist anywhere in the universe, because he doesn't know what's his purpose. So maybe that's what's going on, right? Because, like, even if he exists, then, like, well, what does he do, right? Why would he care about us? And, like, as they say in Islam, like, it doesn't take away anything from his greatness. He's already the best. So, like, what is he doing? You know, like, what's the thing he's after? Yeah. Does he have a goal? I mean, maybe these questions are doesn't make sense. But...
Does he have a purpose, right? He has no purpose. He's atheist.
Yeah, that would be funny, right? So
do you listen to Alan Watts?
Yeah, I've listened to him for a couple of...
He says the same thing. He said that this universe is... I mean, sorry, we are the universe or God, whatever you want to call it.
Technically, we are, yeah, from the Big Bang, but yeah.
And we are the universe's self-realization. Because the universe mm-hmm. itself has no consciousness. I mean, unless you believe in some woo-woo stuff, the universe yeah. is conscious, whatever. But we conscious beings that are able to reflect on the universe and its creation and our own creation, we are the universe becoming self-aware, which is like, true. To me, such a profound idea that the universe is self-aware now to us. Because we are part of the universe, right?
Yeah, that's what Neil deGrasse Tyson says, the scientist, because we basically evolved from the stars, dying and, you know, being born again. So we're technically a stardust.
Yes,
complicated. So yes, we are kind of reflecting on our own existence. And I think everybody's asking question, well, why? And so like the science can answer how, but then it goes to, well, why do I have these things? And it never can answer until you get to religion, right? They tell you, well, this is your purpose. This is why. Because nothing else basically tells you why is there multiverse? Why is there string? Like, why?
And even
I don't care how many are them. Like, just tell me why.
And even, you know? Like, let's be honest. Religion doesn't answer these questions. Religion gives you a made-up reason that
yeah.
is sort of satisfying but doesn't actually answer anything. Where did we come from? Okay, how did the universe start? God did it. Okay, but God did it is just a fill-in-the-blank. It's just a placeholder. By saying mm-hmm. God did it, we still don't understand, right? Unless, see, I believe, I mean...
But you can ask God in the Jannah or something, you know, so it's like, fine.
Ya Allah, okay, why did you create all of us? Why did you make so much suffering? Why did you give kids cancer? Why did you make my mom die in a traffic accident? Like, all of these things that didn't help me in my life, that made me sad, that didn't actually improve my life in any way whatsoever. The person that has a son or daughter that's born with a rare disease, or that's born with autism, or that has cancer. Especially the reason I bring up kids is because kids are innocent. Kids didn't do anything wrong. You can't say a kid suffered because he did something, right?
Well, they have an answer for that.
Which is?
Well, even if they would live a lifetime, they would never become Muslim, so...
Yeah. That's... Yeah, so basically, I mean, at the end of the day, it always comes back to either it's a test or God knows best. Those are the two answers. When you ask about, well, for me, it makes more sense that atheism or deism, but let's say atheism, because everything in this world doesn't seem to be, yes, it's amazing, but it doesn't seem designed by a being that cares. For example, you know, it's basically the watchmaker theory that we find a watch, we'll say there's a designer, but there's so many things in nature that are bizarre. For example, when a woman has a baby, and you know she has to suffer through the pregnancy process, the delivery, because mm-hmm. the place that the baby comes out from is too small, and sometimes even there's bleeding and stuff like that. The cord, the umbilical cord, sometimes gets wrapped around the baby and chokes it to death, and it dies inside. Like there's so many examples of things that they don't make sense. For example, the blind spot that we have, we've evolved a blind spot, and we actually understand quite perfectly why we have a blind spot. It's based on the way that the eyes evolved. For example, octopuses and those type of animals, they don't have a blind spot because their nerves evolved a different way, and so they don't have a blind spot. We don't notice the blind spot because we're always moving our eyes, and so the little spot that's blind, that the little dot that's missing, it's covered up and we don't even notice it. You can notice it with some tricks when you hold a pen, close one eye, and there's, you know, some tricks you can use to kind of bring it up to see. It doesn't look designed, right? I mean, it's amazing. And especially someone, you know, it's not surprising that someone 2000 years ago would see ourselves and would think, yeah, there must have been a first mommy and daddy. And they look up the sky, it looks like a ball. As a kid, I used to look up at the sky and I'm like, we're inside a giant marble. Right. Mm-hmm. It's a naive sort of perspective on the world. And so when you look at it, you think the sky is solid. And the Quran also uses language like that. It says, do you see any cracks in the heavens? And Allah holds up the sky without any pillars and, you know, stuff like that. Right. Allah holds up the sky without any pillars that you can see. So this sort of language is very, primitive. Like that's the best way to put it. So it's religion gives us a very primitive answer to what, a purpose, not a purpose, but why things are the way they are. There's no explanation about the water cycle in the Quran. There's not even an explanation that thinking happens in the brain in any religious book. It always talks about the heart. Do they not ponder, are the hearts sealed? It's always about the heart. So ancient people, they didn't know that females had eggs, the female egg, right? That's fertilized by the male sperm. They didn't know that either. There's such huge holes in all religious books that clearly show that this was a best effort, a best guess at humanity trying desperately to figure out where we fit into this whole thing, right? And from science and from materialistic explanations, naturalistic explanations, things make a lot more sense. We evolved the blind spot. I mean, nobody even knows about the blind spot until now, but we evolved the blind spot because of the way that our eyes evolved, yet other animals don't have a blind spot. We've seen every stage of an eye. So eye is so amazing. It's better than any sort of HD camera you can get. And it refocuses by itself and everything. Yet it evolved naturally. And then so people will say, well, theists especially will say, how is that possible, right? But like we have examples of every single stage of eye evolution in nature. And we found this, right? When Darwin wrote the greatest, the Origin of Species, he was like, the eye, if the eye it blew him away. And he's like, if you can find any organ, any single organ in the human body or any animal or whatever that couldn't have evolved gradually, then you can throw out evolution. Because everything had to be gradual. And the eye to him was like, how could it be gradual? It's either you have an eye or you don't have an eye. But actually, if you found, for example, animals in the water that can see just a little bit of light, and then they get a little bit more focused. And then, and we've studied this and we know now that it's been a gradual process to what we have now. And even our eyes, it's not like we are the pinnacle of perfection of creation or something. We're the best, we're at the top. That's also a misunderstanding because eagles have better eyes than humans. But their eyes evolved for the purpose that they need it for. We don't need eagle eyes, right? Like we don't need that. I'm not looking for mice in the grass to catch and eat. Like I don't need that, right? So gorillas have bigger muscles, but they need those. We don't need those because we have intelligence and we were able to outwit a Neanderthal cousin. And we killed all the Neanderthals most likely, which is a sad part of history. It seems like Homo sapiens destroyed our competitors, right? Which was the Neanderthals. All of us still have a little bit of Neanderthal in us, but like it seems like we probably wiped them out, just like we're wiping out almost every single species on Earth now, which is sad. But we are also intelligent enough to deal with that now, and hopefully we'll go back from the brink, because it does feel like we are on the brink, right? The brink of existence, the edge of the cliff. When we don't even, maybe we'll annihilate ourselves one day. I don't know. I hope not. But well, it's true what you said, it's true what you said, that Islam or religion does give you an explanation that's comforting, that you will meet your father and mother. You will meet your, in your case, unfortunately, everybody's going to hell because nobody's, right? Yeah, so that's exactly. Not much of a reassurance to you. But for a Muslim, like, I'm going to see my mom and dad. I'm going to see my grandma and grandpa. Although even in your case, you could use the excuse that maybe they didn't know about Islam and Allah will judge them accordingly.
Yeah, maybe. Right? The worst thing is like I'm a salesperson and marketer by trade. So I know how to get people to do something without realizing it. And so I knew when they were saying some stuff that they are actually like trying to use some of the theories I know, just not to sell me something like a monetary value, but to implement an idea in my brain to question some stuff. And I think this is the main reason. If you look at the news media or if you look at anything that we talk about anywhere on the planet, nobody talks about this, to be honest. Everybody's concerned like about the traffic. Today's traffic was terrible. Why do I care about that? How does that affect my life. It does affect my life, like in the real world, but like I'm wondering about the big question, and you can't really bring it up to your colleagues, or like it sounds super negative or like depressing when you start talking about these things, like what happens after you die. Nobody wants to talk about that, right? When I'm with my, especially in the West where I am, right, people don't talk about these things, and when they do, they tend to go to like complete nihilism. So you can't even have a solid debate. And media don't really talk about these things. They focus on what's going on in the real world, but nobody's talking about, hey, we actually live in a blue bubble right now, floating around the space. Did anyone notice that? Like, let's talk about it, please. But it doesn't, you know, it's not that, it is interesting for everybody has these ideas, but it's not interesting for media companies or whoever is doing whatever. So that's why I think like the stuff you're doing is important, because like people are, people want some answers. I'm not saying like I have them or you have them, but like at least we're discussing these things, you know, and at least we're getting somewhere, because like isn't that the point, to kind of figure out what's the point? So I would just you know, I would just think that there would be more debates like these, and not just like on the fringe of like society where there's these like religious influencers and these Dawa guys, and then some atheists like Dawkins or whoever, who are like debating amongst each other, and like a couple of people are watching them. But like, it would be like mainstream, because like, you know, it's so important. And absolutely. So if you don't discuss these things, then people will just, whether they do the same thing as I did, because like I knew all these things about an eye or something, but it's still, Islam is still convincing, was still convincing to me, you know, because I never heard that perspective before.
Yeah.
So that's so powerful about it, because Christianity didn't explain it like that. So, you know, it's just, it's so powerful, this concept of God, you know. Sometimes it's just like, okay, it's super powerful. And then everything can be, basically you can, everything else that follows can be basically tracked back to Allah. Like, okay, but Allah wants that. Or you don't wear hijab? Well, why? Like, Allah wants that, right? So you have to kind of follow everything that goes after that, after you make that hump. So it's, you know, that's the sales part of it. But the concept is actually pretty good. And I understand the primitive part. And I understand some things were clearly written for people in the, I think, 14th century, 7th century, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you can see it in the writing. But some things are like universal. So those are the things that speak to you as a 21st century man, you know, looking at these like, okay, I can see some meaning in this. And then you kind of have to unpack it, which is a problem in the Bible, because Bible doesn't have any of this. Bible just have stories, right? It's a very different book. So I can just see like, this is made up, you know.
Do you have any examples, specific examples?
From Bible or from Quran?
That you found compelling or interesting, or just in general?
Yeah, I don't remember any right now. I think it was, I've read like first 70, I think. What's the name of the?
Surahs.
Surahs, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was all really compelling. But then as it goes further and it talks about the daily lifestyle, like, okay, if you're getting a divorce, this is how you do it, or those things, then it doesn't make sense, right? If it goes to like your daily life, like what to do with your wife and all these things, I'm like looking at this like, okay, well, this is going to be hard to swallow. I have a girlfriend who's been with me for 5 years, and I have to let her go. And what? Because you can't have a girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
And I'm damn.
You know, that's actually an under something that's not spoken about. How Islam, I mean, I'm going to sound very negative here, because it is very negative. How Islam ruins converts' lives in sometimes, not always. I've heard of so many stories of people, the imam told them to quit their job. I mean, the guy has, for example, he works at a liquor store. Maybe he's not well educated, or maybe his business is haram somehow, right? And sometimes imams will tell them, they'll go to the freshly converted, they don't know anything about Islam. A good example, music industry. I know people in the music industry, they were told to quit their career, their lifetime career.
Yeah, I don't get the music thing. Somebody tried to explain to me, why is it haram? But I was like, well, I get some videos are like really obscene, but then, you know, like, why is listening to music so bad?
Yeah, it's definitely very controversial, because there's been many Muslims that do music, right? And this very famous singer, Muslim singers, even religious singers, like, you know, like Qawwali, Sufis, of course. Now, the funny thing is, it's not just Salafis, or it's not just the Wahhabis or the Saudi sort of interpretation or strand of Islam, because when I grew up and I converted to Sunni Islam, and I was talking to Muslims. Regular mainstream Muslims are not Salafi, even Sufi Muslims, and Sufis love music. They were against instruments. They were totally against it. The dad or the mom wouldn't let them listen to music in the house. And these guys are Sufi leaning, meaning they're like the more liberal sect in terms of, like, they celebrate the Prophet's birthday. They're lively. Some of them, they go in circles, although not the ones I knew. They weren't the spinning type of Sufi. They were the Sunni Sufis, right? But they were that, even they had a problem with music. But like, when you tell a convert that they have to get circumcised, that they have to, you know, break up with the girl. My wife was told to break up with me when I left Islam. This is kind of like the opposite scenario now. If you converted to Islam and you're in a relationship now with someone that's now haram, you have to leave your girlfriend, you have to like quit your career.
If you would say that to me in the beginning, I would be like, you're crazy. But once you get into it, right, you kind of start considering these things.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And at the end of the day, you're sold something that you cannot, how do I say this? Like, the trade, it would be completely irrational to not do it, because you're going to go to paradise anyway. So why not just give up everything? I mean, if you take it far enough, and it depends on people's individual personalities, like how far they take it, you could take it to the point of being willing to die for your religion, because
that's how you should take it, I think. Like, if you completely believe it, you should just go and live like a prophet, right? And like, follow everything that is in the book. So technically, that's where you're kind of going.
And that's what causes pain, right? Because a lot of these Muslim converts, I mean, I burned some bridges too when I converted to Sunni Islam. I'm saying Sunni Islam because obviously I changed sects. Some people say Ismailis were not Muslim because it's so different. And I'm not going to go into that, how different it is. It's very, very different. So in my perspective as a Sunni Muslim, I converted the religion completely because it was totally different to me. And when I converted, I burned some bridges with my dad. And I was like kind of arguing with him and saying, you're misguided, you're going to go to hell. That's what happens. You become so, I don't want to say radical, but you become very zealous.
Well, because it's like, you're going to hell. I'm convinced about it. So what am I going to do? Not tell you about it? Like, you're going there.
And according to Sunni belief, Ismailis are doing shirk, which is the only unforgivable sin. So it's basically associating partners with Allah. So I thought, my parents are going to, my mom's Sunni, my dad's going to go to hell. I have to convince him. And I'm like arguing with him. And he was like, he was way too mature to argue with me. He's like, I don't want to talk about, even though, see, I was the one who had the religious understanding. He didn't. So I was, when I was debating with him, he didn't have any response to me because I'm like, well, the Quran says this. And he was like, didn't know what to say. He's like, I don't, you know, it's a matter of faith to me. But I think he was right. He was being agnostic about it. I was being very dogmatic about it. And I was saying, this is what the Quran says. He was saying, why are you taking it literally? And I was like, well, you're supposed to take it literally. That's the whole point of it. Right? That's the whole point. You have to give up all these things. And I tried to convince my mom to sell the house, or the condo that she was living in, and to get rid of the mortgage. I feel so embarrassed about this now, even talking about this. I convinced, oh my God, it's like horrible. I convinced a guy to give up his real estate career, although I didn't intend that at the time. I wasn't expecting he would quit. It wasn't only me. It was a bunch of people who were talking to him. It was saying this interest is haram. And, you know, anyone that eats riba is at war with Allah. Allah will fight them on the day. And I was like, I was going on and I was telling him all these things. And I met him recently. I'm like, I left Islam, and the guy has a big beard. He's wearing this, the tobe, the Islamic tobe. I'm like, how's your real estate? He's like, I quit. I'm like, you quit? Why? He's like, it's haram. I'm like, it's not haram to sell houses. It's haram to get mortgages. He's like, yeah, but I can't sell houses without giving mortgages. I have to get them a mortgage. So I'm like, okay, what are you doing now? Like, you were doing so well. Like, what are you doing now? And he's like, I work at an Islamic school or something. I'm like, oh my God. I felt so bad for the guy.
Yeah, I mean, once he accepted that that's the premise, then he has to follow it. So unfortunately, it's nothing you can do about it, I guess, until...
And the majority, I find the majority of Muslims don't do that, though. Majority of Muslims have their cake and eat it too. They believe in Islam. They also do all the haram things too.
Yeah.
No problem with that, right? It's definitely very, and I never understood that.
I think those are the Muslims who are born into it. So that's a bit different.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the same, like, I'm Christian, but I don't really follow it, right? Yeah. I think especially the concept of fear of judgment, judgment day, that's super, super interesting. You know, it's like, man, I'm really scared now. Like, every sin, everything I'm doing is going to be presented in front of Allah, and He's going to judge me. And we're going to drown in the sweat. I'm going to drown, and prophets are going to be watching me. I'm like, damn, this is pretty hardcore. I told this to my girlfriend, and she was like, that sounds hardcore. Like, do you really think that's going to happen? I'm like, probably. Let's just start being good people, because I was drinking a lot. You know, I was like, I'm a typical Westerner. So I'm like, and then I was like, okay, we need to be like very conscious about what we're doing right now, because I don't want to do those things. And then I told my mom, like, hey, I might be considering Islam. What do you think? She was like, just don't kill anyone, please. Like, that's the first thing, you know, because we have a big misconception about Muslims. We have almost zero Muslims in Slovakia or Czech Republic. So it's like very bad image, really, you know, on TV. So Muslims are terrorists. That's how we think about.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the association. So she was like, just don't get too deep into it. I'm like, don't worry. I still have my logical brain, hopefully. But then,
you know, that's interesting, because according to Islam, you shouldn't drink. Drinking is haram. Having a girlfriend is haram. So, you know, being with her is zina, is adultery.
Yeah.
And you should be lashed 40 times in public for everyone to look at you. And
who's going to lash me here in Prague? There's no Muslims. I mean, I don't know.
And on top, but if you have a slave and you have sex with her, that's okay. That's perfectly halal. That's nothing wrong with that, according to Islam. Because Islam, I mean, this is the problem with religious morality in general, is it just flips the table and it creates its own arbitrary thing. For example, you cannot, you cannot marry your foster sister, your suckling sister. So if, because according to Muhammad's time, even Muhammad himself was sent out of Mecca to the desert for the pure Bedouins to nurse, to suckle him. So he had a wet nurse, Halima, her name was, and she suckled him as a baby. And usually the wealthy aristocrat people used to send their babies to the desert, because they felt the desert life is more pure than the city life. So a lot of the Arab people, they used to be suckled. Now what happened is, according to that culture, that lady kind of becomes like a mom to you. So if she suckled you and she suckled somebody else, you cannot marry that woman, even though you have this zero genetic relationship between you guys. There's zero possibility of having any sort of problems from this relationship, because in that culture, it becomes a mother, even to the point where in one of the hadith, Prophet Muhammad had a man come to him and he said, this woman came and told me and my wife, I suckled you both. And he said, you have to divorce her. He broke up a couple. Because when that man was a baby, she had breast milk from the same woman as his wife, which, as a baby, how does that make any sense? Now, but according to Islam, you can marry your cousin, your blood cousin who has genetic information, which is, I have no problem with cousin marriage. I don't want to sound like I'm, let's be honest. There's nothing, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with cousin marriage if you do it once. If you do it repeatedly, over and over and over again, like you find in the Muslim world today, you have major problems. Major problems. I have a friend I used to work with. His wife is related to him. And if they have they cannot have a baby. They tried so many times, the baby keeps dying. It keeps having, you know. And I'm like, I don't think you should have a baby. I'm like, you're so closely related to his wife that they have, like, he has to take some needles or something. He has health issues. She has health issues. And they want to have a kid. And the only reason they have health issues is because of cousin marriage. Cousin marriage, cousin marriage, cousin marriage, cousin marriage. So Islam allows something that's actually harmful when done repeatedly, even though it's nothing wrong if you do it once. But if there's a small risk, but again, I don't care. But if you do it 100 times, Pakistan has a big problem in Bradford in UK. I shouldn't say Bradford, but anyways, in UK in general, there's a lot of Muslims, Pakistani Muslims, that have genetic problems, blindness. Sometimes it gets to blindness, mental retardation. It's so sad. And all of it is caused by repeated cousin marriage. right now.
Yeah, I've heard about this inbreeding stuff. Yeah.
Inbreeding is a kind of not so nice way of putting it. That's basically what it is, right? It's so this is the problem with Islam. It creates, it gives you values, but the values are very arbitrary. Like you said, when it comes to divorce and like, oh yeah, you mentioned something interesting, which I wanted to talk about. You said we're going to be drowning in sweat. I never understood this whole drowning in sweat thing. If the sun comes close to us, first of all, we'd be fried to a crisp. Okay, but forget that. Somehow we won't be fried to a crisp. But we'll be sweating buckets. Where's all that water coming from? And we'll be drowning in sweat. Like if I'm sweating, even if I'm sweating buckets, I wouldn't drown in the sweat. I'm not in a hole. I never understood this. Like, how does that make sense?
Well, maybe you're taking it too literally. Maybe it was just like a phrase, you know. I don't know if you should take everything like, you know, as it was written. Maybe it was just like a metaphor to say like you'll be drowning in sweat of buckets or whatever. Just to, you know, give you an idea that it's going to be horrible.
Let me see if I can find the hadith, because I actually think the hadith actually mentions the sun will be so close that for some people...
Yeah, that's exactly...
If I remember correctly, it says for some people the sweat will be up to the
knees,
the toe, and for some people it'll be up to the eyes or something. And I didn't really understand like it, because here's the problem. The problem is that the hadith is more specific than it should be if that's not supposed to be literally. That's the problem, right? So let me just bring up the hadith here. It says that the sun will come near to the people to such an extent that the sweat will reach up to the middle of the ears.
Mm.
Like it sounds literal. It doesn't sound like it's not you will be terrified, or the language is, it's like, okay, you know, they say when you're quoting a price, for example, if you're giving a range, you wouldn't say it's between 1.257 and 2 point, like you wouldn't say that. You would say it's between 1 and 2. It's between 1 and 100. You wouldn't say 100.56. Like you don't give a level of specificity that's more than the basically the way, you know, how confident you are in the value. You know what I'm saying? So we say 4.3 billion years, the universe, for example, right? Plus minus 10 million or whatever. We don't say 4.325787 billion years the universe is existing. So the problem I find is today it's possible, I think, to not take these things literally because it becomes nonsensical. But if you try to understand the hadith, the way they would have understood it, they would have understood it probably literally. But maybe there's a disconnect between what Muhammad was describing and what I'm understanding, because I don't understand how this is possible. I mean, unless you're standing inside a hole, how would the sweat reach? And
yeah,
there's other hadith actually more specific than that. They actually say the sun will reach up to the eyes for some. I can't find it right now, right?
Yeah. But
basically it's just like,
I think those things can be found in Bible as well. It's just like you should take them with a grain of salt. Like, okay, this is probably written for people who are not in this century, but it's still like, the point is not the, it's going to be beyond ears. It's the point is you're going to be freaking scared. Yeah. That's the point, right? Mm-hmm. So the point is pretty clear, whether it's specific or not. You know, if you hear it for the first time, I'm like, okay, this is very tough. And so I see somebody said like, living a life with no meaning is not life worth living. That's why Islam provides an answer. And I think that's it. Like, this summarizes my thing. Like, you know, if you're living a life and you didn't have that in your life, it's kind of like you're always searching for what's the purpose, right? And you're never gonna find it if you don't go through some sort of religious, I don't know, road or whatever you want to call it.
I feel like you don't need that. You can have meaning without religion. I make my own meaning in life. My purpose is to be a parent, to be a prophet developer, to be an activist, to you know, be an environmentalist in some ways, you know.
But it's your meaning, but I'm talking about objective meaning. So every person should have an...
Why does it have to be objective? Why can't I have my own meaning?
That's because it's probably not true, right? Because every person has a different, like, somebody wants to be a good father, somebody wants to have a job, right? So everybody has a different kind of goal that gives them purpose in life based on what they're doing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong. Yeah. But I'm saying that God gives you objective morality, objective meaning. Everything is objective. So this is your meaning. This is the purpose. And you can't beat that. With your subjective meaning, it's so small compared to what he wants from you, right? Like, why would I be a YouTuber when I know I'm going to go to hell? Like, wouldn't I do that first, right? So it gives you like such a huge meaning that you can't beat it with like, I'm going to be a career, I'm going to have an agency.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's still boring. So yeah.
It gives you a meaning and it claims to be a true meaning. But
that's the fun part, yeah.
In reality, you know, the meaning it gives you. So the way I see it, God's objective meaning is subjective. God, if God says something, like let's look at it from a perspective of morality. If God says slavery is okay under these conditions, and Islamic condition, I'm not going to strawman Islam. I'm going to say the proper conditions. According to Islam, prisoners of war that you capture, female slaves and male slaves, you own them. They become your property. You can sell them. Mm-hmm. You can buy them. You own them. When you die, you can pass them on to your kids, just like a house. According to Allah in the Quran, and even, you know, the Old Testament allowed it as well, this is objectively okay. Do you agree this is objectively okay?
If you agree with the premise, then yeah, you have to agree. You don't have a choice, right?
Is it so? There's a very fascinating thought experiment called the Euthyphro dilemma, and Euthyphro's dilemma is basically, you know, hold on, let me just look it up. Basically, he asked some questions. I think is it from Plato? Socrates, yeah. So Socrates asked the question: is the pious loved by the gods because it is pious? Or is it pious because it is loved by the God? So basically, is it a good deed does God love it? Does Allah love good deeds because they are good deeds? Or are they good deeds because Allah said the good deeds? Now, if you take, and it's a very fascinating discussion where he basically questions, again, he's questioning people. And the conclusion he comes up with is that it's not a good deed because God says so. Because if God says something that's bad is good, we wouldn't agree. If God said you have to take your oldest son and sacrifice him, that wouldn't be a good deed no matter what God loves it. That's just God's opinion. And we would say objectively, I mean, not objectively, subjectively, we would say as human beings, that's not right to kill someone just because your religion says so. That's not right to basically, you know, murder in the sake of religion. And so God, if God exists, he has an opinion too. His opinion is not necessarily right just because he's God. God can be wrong too, because just because he's all powerful does not make him, he cannot change good into bad. He might say, if you do this, you'll be rewarded, like an evil king. An evil king can say, I'm going to send you. And Muhammad did this. Muhammad sent two men to murder Ka'b ibn Ashraf. And they asked him, can we lie? Because, you know, lying is not allowed in Islam. He's like, yeah, do what you want. Do what you need to. So they went to him. They called him up and they said, hey, it's your friends from before. And they were his friends, right, from Medina. And they said, we want to talk to you. And he's like, why? And he was like, suspicious, right? Why are you guys coming at night? Like, oh, we just want to talk to you. We want to talk about old times. And he said, okay. He came down and they killed him. And they went back to Muhammad, and Muhammad is very happy that he basically, so according to Islam, this assassination is considered a good thing. And to this day, you will find people who will, you know, murder the opponents of Islam because they will take precedent from Muhammad's actions in killing Ka'b ibn Ashraf. If this is a true God, first of all, none of us will ever agree that this is a good thing, right? Like, this is not, you cannot justify this. Even if God said it, it's still not right because it's wrong. We know it's wrong. Where do
but
we get
he
that?
Is all, he is all knowing. You can't, you know, so, you are not. So maybe there's a reason.
The reason we can subjectively say that this is wrong is because at the end of the day, just because God is able to punish us does not make what he says correct necessarily. And like I said, go back to Euthyphro's dilemma and do look at it, because I think that it kind of, it helps to kind of bring the idea about that really at the end of the day, God's opinion is just his opinion. Yes, he can punish us. So if there was an evil God that told you, you have to kill everybody, but I will reward you for that. If you did that, you would still be a bad person for doing that, but you'd be saving your own butt, basically. And that's how I see Islam in some ways. I see it as saving your own butt, not necessarily, you have no choice. Like you said, you have no choice. God is going to punish you if you don't do it. So if you don't worship this God, he will throw you in hell. And of course, if you're not convinced, then it's not appealing. I mean,
I think there are two Muslim types. So two types of people. The ones who are very kind of, I would say they embrace the love part of Islam, and they try to find everything good about Allah and everything good about the whole religion. And I think that's kind of the majority of people trying to live their life, you know, go to school, pray five times a day. You know, they don't drink, they don't do some stuff, but they are trying to kind of just live their life. And technically, there's nothing out of ordinary going on. And then there's the other side where they try to go through the concepts which you just described, which are kind of problematic to associate with love. And so I have an analogy that I've heard. Imagine that you have a bug on your table and you really love the bug. Like it's a small bug. But you can't show him the love, right? Because it doesn't have a cognitive power. It doesn't know you exist. But then you have a dog, and the dog can show you an affection, right? And you can show him an affection, right? So you can exchange some love, but it's still very primitive because it's still a dog. And then imagine you have a son or a daughter. So that level of love is completely different because they can engage in you can engage them, and you kind of are experiencing some memory or basically experiencing life together. So it's a completely different level of love than you have with dog or with the bug. And so the whole idea behind this was that when Allah says in the Quran, like, I'm the all merciful, I'm the all forgiving, whatever it is, he has these seven, let's say, properties that he's keep repeating, because the closer you get to them, let's say merciful, so you forgive people for doing wrong and whatever, the closer you get to them, the closer you're getting to Allah, because that's how he shows you love, right? So he is the all merciful. So then if you become more merciful in your life and have more mercy on whatever with your enemies, that's how close you're going to get to him. And I think that's a good analogy to kind of maybe showcase that that's what he's trying to do. When I was saying that God is trying to realize himself through this religion or whatever, maybe that's kind of what's going on. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying it's a good analogy. And yeah, it kind of made sense to me. I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
So why didn't you just find this in Christianity then? If you just want a general, God is good, God is love, you know, get closer to God. Because Islam, I mean, I think Christianity has, I mean, all religions I think have bad and good. The reason for bringing up the whole slavery thing is not because Muslims are involved in slavery to this. I mean, some of them are, but I mean, ISIS, for example, but I mean, not common Muslims. Common Muslims would agree that slavery is bad, but it's because it shows the problems with this claim. It shows the contradictions in this claim that Islam claims to be all good, yet it allows a slave owner to have sex with his slave, female slave, which doesn't make sense.
That's the part that is hard to kind of go through, right? Even if you accept the basics, and even if you go through the God, then that's when it stops me, like a Westerner, from being like, well, that cannot be right, right? Like it cannot be the case. Like no matter how I look at it, then I can only justify it with the concept of God, and then I have to reject that concept and go back to my default position, which was like agnosticism or something like that, because like I can't do it. And I can't just blindly say, well, that's what God wants. Well, then I go, well, did he did the revelation? Really? Like, was Muhammad really getting the revelation? And then I have to question the whole thing. Right? So, yeah.
So for everyone that's who's been here, we've been going on for about an hour now and a bit. Mm. Thank you for joining the stream. I'm discussing with Jan Tusek. He was very interested in Islam, and this has been a great conversation so far. And I wanted to ask anyone that's new here to please subscribe, thumbs up if you like the video, and consider joining the channel. Your support definitely helps me, and hopefully one day I can do this full time. But if not, I will continue doing it in my spare time. So thank you so much for that. And we're gonna plug Jan's channel. Jan, do you wanna promote your personal channel, your sales one, or the other one?
No, it doesn't make sense. So the only one, it's called Debating Truth very easy to remember. Just Google Debating Truth or go to the website or just type it in YouTube. I have only 30 subscribers, so if you subscribe, I'm going
to
be happy.
A lot more right now. Guys, we're going to check out his channel. I'm going to put it in the description box. I don't have the link with me right now, but I'm going to put it right after. So going back to the story, and we didn't get to finish, so let's try to finish the story. What ended up happening then? Obviously, you know, emotionally, you're saying this appealed to you a lot. This made a lot of sense. This gave you, you know, a lot of certainty and happiness and purpose, things that we desperately need as human beings, right? For me, just before you explain what ended up happening, I find, you know, peace in meditation. I find that meditation and, you know, the world is very, very harsh, very evil, very empty and cold at times. I find that meditation helps to kind of bring me at peace with the existence around me. Mm-hmm. And all of these material things, sometimes they don't bring satisfaction, and they're just distractions. But meditation is a sort of a way of syncing up with reality and kind of coming to peace with it as it is. No matter how bad your life is, you can kind of find inner solitude in your mind, and you can train your mind to not be distracted and overwhelmed with all of these things. So to me, that's have you ever tried meditation?
Yeah, man, I've been meditating since I was 12. I've been to Buddhist temples. Oh. I've done it all. You know,
Nice. So let's finish your story then. So what ended up happening? Why did you end up discarding Islam?
Yeah, I mean, there was no like a point that I can reflect upon. It was just kind of, you know, videos I watched about certain like small issues like the slavery you've mentioned, or some relationship with women and some stuff like that. And then I came across a couple of YouTube videos from ex-Muslims, and I tried to organize this debate between Muslims and ex-Muslims, and then I tried to look up different points, and it kind of led me to back to my default position. But however, I am not an atheist at this point, right? So I'm not somebody who rejects the claim that there is a God. I'm somewhere like, how would I say? I'm somewhere between agnostics and somebody who believes in God, like fully. So I'm like 72% sure. So more than half. And maybe that's, it can be a simulation. I don't care. It's just something, right, outside of the universe. It can be like somebody programmed something, and then that thing is governing us. Whatever it is, I still think there's something. So, so it kind of was like a bunch of videos, kind of articles I looked up, and then just Quran didn't make sense to me in a couple of things. And so I kind of had to go to that decision where I have to reject the claim that the Quran was revealed, then I have to reject God because otherwise I can't justify the beating of a wife or the murder of something. Like, I can't justify it with this concept. I think this is a bit different for somebody who grows up with this religion, which was not my case. I didn't have anyone. I joined a couple of webinars of people who were trying to give me guidance, but it just wasn't there. So, and then I was just like, okay, I tried it. It was a good concept. I now have a full perspective, not full, but I completely understand what the Muslim perspective is. So when I go to different country, when I go to Turkey or somewhere, I respect people because I understand where they're coming from, because their values are different, right? So your first value is Allah. From there, it goes to a country and then individuality. Where I live, it's all about your own personal, whatever you want to be, like LGBT, whatever you want, that's your first thing. Then there's a country, and then the last, God, is not even there. Like, forget about God. So it's a completely different way of values that people have here. So then you can't really judge people from your sense of values. You have to kind of experience like, okay, well, their value is Allah, and whatever he says is the first thing. So it's not up to you, or not even your family or country. It's up to him to make everything. So that's why it's a political kind of, it's a very intertwined with politics, right? Islam, which is not the case with Christianity usually. So that's what's really cool. Sorry?
Which I think is a good thing. It's not intertwined with politics anymore. But in the U.S., it is. In the U.S., I mean, you have stem cell bans on stem cell research because of Christian groups. You have debates on teaching evolution, whether you should teach evolution in school, and or you should teach creationism, which is basically a made-up story. You had the government ban not sending financial aid to to Africa and instead teaching abstinence, instead of sending condoms, they were teaching them, no, don't have sex. And so many people got AIDS because they didn't send them. You know, there's a lot of warped priorities, even I think today with Christianity and politics, where they mix. And I think it's a bad thing that they're mixing. I think we have to continue fighting to keep those two things separate. If someone wants to be religious, it should be a private thing. They can be religious, they can go to the mosque or go to church, but it shouldn't be affecting public life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Yeah. But again, if you accept Islam, you have to affect public life, right? There's no way around this. You have to go there. So
it's hard not to. I mean, I think majority of Muslims nowadays don't care about politics. And I remember even when I was a Muslim that some people used to get mad if you brought up politics in the mosque. They'd be like, why are you bringing politics into this? But then there was a Hizb ut-Tahrir, the Islamists, the people that believe Islam and politics are part and parcel of each other. They would be arguing, of course, we can talk about politics. Islam is all about politics. In my opinion, obviously, they have a stronger case. But it's religion. You can make it up as you go along. It doesn't have to be, you know, the interpretation doesn't have to be one way, because otherwise everyone would be ISIS. And that's not obviously the case. Mm-hmm. Right? There's some room for interpretation. There's some room for throwing out things you don't like. Of course, the cherry picking approach is probably the best approach. But then what's the point, if you ask me? What's the point of even having religion then? Just make up your own religion. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to figure out, like, if I can somehow conserve the concept of God and then have some sort of my own thing. But I guess I would have to start a church or something, because none of the other religions make sense to me. So, but I should be by default Christian. It would be such an easy position, to be honest, because I am surrounded by them. There's churches everywhere, right? I have 20 churches in my street. So yeah, but that's not what I can do.
It didn't fit for you, eh?
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Okay, I want to say thank you for that. I have added your channel to a description box. So guys, let's get him up to over the 100 mark in terms of subscribers. There's 250 people here right now. So go and check
out your
channel, and let's get him new subscribers. What are you talking about on your channel?
It's not really about religion, but it is. I tend to dive deep into philosophy. So I study Seneca, or kind of doing breakdowns of Mike Tyson. He's a very interesting character. I talk about culture, politics, you know, foreign policy. That's my kind of background. That's what I was studying. But I also have a business channel, but I don't tend to bring that up. So I can talk about that a bit. But I'm not one of the influencers in this atheist / religious space. Maybe I will become one, maybe in the future, but not right now. So it's just deep things.
Nice. I mean, you know what? It's great. The reason I asked you to come on the show is I watched your video about how you're Muslim for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I like the way you talk. And you've obviously thought about these things, and you've had an experience that is, you know, worth hearing. I mean, this is very interesting, right? So I thought it'd be awesome to talk to you. And that's why I had you on here. So yeah, definitely, guys, check out his channel. It's not only about religion. It's going to be about many things, but he is trying to organize a debate with Cosmic Skeptic and maybe, I don't know, Wu Daniel. So yeah, do join his channel as well. And you know, and it'll be good. Thank you everyone for having this here. Do you want to add any final comments? Any final comments to either non-Muslims or Muslims?
For Muslims, I understand what you're doing and what you're saying, and so thanks for that. And for non-Muslims, try to be also open-minded and try to see the other side. And let's not hate each other, and let's just kind of understand each other's perspectives. That's the point.
Beautiful final words. Thank you so much, Jan. And we will maybe have you on again in a year or something after you have your debate thing, and we can have some new reflections on there.
Yeah, for sure. Be happy to.